You good? You ready?
Yeah, whatever.
Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys, the podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me as always is Max. Max, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. All things considered.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, it's tax day.
It is. Did you do your taxes?
Yeah, I did mine.
That's good.
Like in February.
Oh. Very punctual.
Yeah. Did you do yours?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago. So.
Well, that's good.
I procrastinate, but I got the damn thing done.
That's better than a lot of the folks who come into where I work and are like, I don't know how to do my taxes. And I'm like, I'm a librarian.
You're not a certified accountant?
I'm not allowed to even disclose tax information.
Oh.
Which is nice.
Well, then don't ask Max to do your taxes.
No, please don't.
You can ask Max for some interesting facts about death.
You can do that. But no one at work ever wants to talk about that.
Oh, weird.
Although, I do want to just give a little shout out to my coworker Nola here. I came into the office today. I don't work in an office. I don't know. I came into the staff room today.
Yeah.
And on my desk in the back, there was just a, what's the pyramid scheme thing? Like the pyramid scheme company?
I don't know. There's a number of them, I feel like.
But the big one.
Avon?
No, like the...
Girl Scouts?
Amway.
Oh.
There was like an Amway box on my desk. And I was like, what is this? And then I opened it up, and there was just a bird skeleton inside. And she was like, I was at my sister's house, and we found this in the fireplace, and I thought that you might want it.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, it's very neat.
You got some cool coworkers.
Yeah. Bring me skeletons, bones.
We are always accepting bone donations here on the podcast.
Also, you can visit our Ko-Fi to help us buy a skull.
You can. And we just need, like, another $900. And some change, and then we'll be able to buy a human skull from one of our local antique shops here.
But then we'll have to, would we like Wisdom of Solomon the skull and have to like cut it in half? Like, where would it stay?
No. If that's the case, then you can just have the skull, because I don't want any harm to come to the skull. Now that means that I get it, right? That it's just mine? Isn't that how that works?
In here lies the paradox. Because it's whoever wants it more.
I do. I don't know. You were the one who tweeted it out, so I think you probably do. As long as I can look at it, then I'm cool with you having it.
Yeah.
Having custody.
I don't know where I put it. I don't have tables. I don't have any tables in my house. I have like a table, this little nightside table that we're recording on, and a dresser, and they're always covered in shit all the time. So.
That's okay. You'll get your life together at some point.
Hopefully soon. So, you know how last time we got together, we talked about plants?
Yes.
Little friends that grow up out of the ground.
Yes, and, or out of your lungs sometimes.
Yep, or out of your head if you're an ant.
Yep.
Or in a video game. So, you know, if you recall, we gave a little bit of a hint at the end of our last plant episode about what our topic tonight would be. You know, something about how we were going to talk about one of the creepiest plant/death intersections. And that was true. I didn't forget about that. Because tonight, we are going to be talking about Aokigahara.
Aokigahara.
Which maybe is better known over here in the States as the Japanese Suicide Forest.
Oh boy.
Kind of unfortunately, it's a bummer that it just gets like slapped with that one thing.
It is a pretty big thing though.
It's pretty big. But like, I'll get into this as we're going to talk about it. But it's a really beautiful forest. So let's crack into the topic tonight with the Pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment. This time brought to you by Waterloo.
Perfection.
Yours is good?
Seltzed perfection.
Can I try yours?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're trying the mango. I just finished a pack of lime, so I'm not even going to bother trying yours because I already know what it tastes like.
Oh my, that's very mango-y.
It is. I like it. I can see your face that it's a little intense for you, but that's okay.
It sounds strong.
That's why I picked it.
I think for all the people out there who are like, I feel like we got to get the goofs in early on this one because it's a kind of hard topic to goof about.
Yeah.
But I feel like for all the cowards out there who are just like, oh, LaCroix tastes like you're drinking some water and someone yells strawberry from the other room.
Oh, it tastes like lime if the battery were dying. That's my favorite. That is pretty funny.
That's pretty good.
Those are all honestly very funny. It doesn't make me like seltzer any less, but I understand if you don't like it. And the jokes, I do appreciate.
If you're the kind of person who feels that way, I genuinely think Waterloo is a good option. Because it's a little stronger.
Yeah, it has some flavor to it.
It's pungent.
Yeah. Before we get into the topic, I did want to say, I knew that we were going to be talking about a very important piece of Japanese history. And so...
Yeah, I kind of noticed that. I didn't want to say anything earlier.
Oh, you noticed my my outfit? I figured, you know, what better way to present this information than to have an expert on Japanese culture? An otaku, if you will. A Japanophile.
Are you going to talk about what you're wearing?
I have my Dragon Ball Z Cell Saga t-shirt. And I'm wearing my Berserk pants that I bought, these sweatpants, at an anime convention this year. So I am rife with Japanese culture.
I didn't realize that they sold pants at anime conventions.
I didn't
either. That makes me really happy.
I saw them and I had to have them. And they're very comfy. They're pajama pants that they feel great.
It's very nice.
Yeah. So I just wanted to let the listener know that we are authorities on the subject. Probably the best you could find.
I'm wearing a Philadelphia Phillies shirt, and, you know, Philadelphia is not exactly known for being a welcoming city to most people, so I don't know if I'm going to balance you out here, but...
Yeah, well, it probably has as much to do with the Aoki Gahara as Dragon Ball Z does, so I think you're in the clear.
It's very good. So, the big last kind of cultural flare-up that Aoki Gahara had was when Logan Paul, I have to check my notes because I know there's two.
Yes.
And I work with a lot of tweens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't employ tweens, but I work around a lot of tweens.
Yeah, they come into the library.
And they talk about both Logan Paul and Jake Paul, and I don't know what the difference is.
They're both douchers. Are kids still into either of them? I feel like they're celebrities. I don't know. It seems like it's cooling off a little bit.
Yeah, I think this was kind of a big PR hit, and he kind of had to lay low for a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just want to start this one off at the top by saying Logan Paul. It's on site.
That's right.
If Dorian ever sees you, I'm not going to do anything. But I would, like, yell a lot while Dorian hit you hard.
I'll do enough for the both of us, buddy.
Yeah. I'm not really, like, built for punching, so.
That's cool. He recently had like a weird YouTube pay-per-view boxing fight with some other YouTuber. So we're trying to get on that cash grabby content creation bullshit. I'm trying to schedule a fight with Logan Paul. That's right. You heard the news here first on the Pre-Dead Boys.
Are you? Should we tweet at him?
Yeah, why not? He's a chode and he probably won't accept.
We'll attach this podcast link on there. So, you know, like, given that, I do want to say that if you are looking for a podcast that's going to fetishize Aoki Gahara as some exotic locale that is only about suicide, you're going to have to go somewhere else. That's not what we're going to do here.
Get out of here.
Because we're going to do our best as two nerds to provide a comprehensive history and overview of the forest, and not just the suicide part.
Mm-hmm. To otaku, if you will.
I thought you was like a T-O-O, and I forgot. I keep forgetting what like some of the words you say mean. Because my parents did not let me watch anime growing up.
Anime?
Isn't that how you actually pronounce it, or is that just some?
I don't know.
Oh Jesus!
I love that anytime I drag you into the anime weeaboo bullshit, you just get flustered and blush a little bit. You're like, God damn it, Dorian, why are you doing this to me?
I heard I heard a Junji Ito reference on a podcast recently, and I got really like riled up and excited about it. And then I guess that's just like everyone knows Junji Ito.
He's definitely gotten more popular the past couple of years in the era of creepypasta and whatnot. Junji Ito's has stood the test of time.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yes.
So with all that being said, let's dive into the history and overview of the forest itself. So Dorian, where are we going to be here?
Japan? Yep. Oh, you want me to read the notes? All right.
Yes, Japan. Anyway.
Also, this. Aokigahara is a forest that lies at the base of Mount Fuji, less than 100 miles west of Tokyo. Locally, it is also known under the name of Jukai, or Sea of Trees, because of its very high density of trees. The forest sits on 12 square miles of hardened lava, layered by the eruptions of Mount Fuji. Most of the lava was deposited after a major eruption in 864 AD. The western edge of Aokigahara, where there are several caves that fill with ice in winter, is a popular destination for tourists and school trips. Parts of Aokigahara are very dense, and the porous lava absorbs sound, helping to provide visitors with a sense of solitude.
Yeah, so right off the bat, have you ever listened to the band Jukai?
No. I was just thinking that's a great band name. I didn't know.
Yeah, they're like a really sick metalcore band. I think you would actually really dig them.
That sounds like my jam.
Yeah, like they're super heavy. But yeah, it's really rad name for a band. And I guess it's convenient that you let off with saying Japan, because I realized I did not specify. If you don't know where Tokyo or Mount Fuji is, they are in Japan. So thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, you really take for granted just how true weebs we are. You just own up to it. You know more than the average person.
What I'm doing is I'm assuming that our listeners are extremely smart people who know where Tokyo is.
Oh,
I have seen Fast and Furious 3.
I just assume they're all weebs. Are we an anime podcast?
Can we add that as like our iTunes tag?
Yeah, on a tag. I thought that's why we covered Uzumaki.
And Yuri on Ice that one time.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
So Aokigahara is, I've seen photos of it, and a lot of the photos are in the main kind of forest area, and you see it and you think, oh, that's just a forest. That's just a really heavy forest, you know? I just never really realized until now that it was at the base of Mount Fuji, which, like, even if you've never seen a photo of Aokigahara, you've seen photos of that really picturesque, like, snow-capped mountain, you know?
Yeah.
But it's easy to forget that that is still considered an active volcano, which means it has a lot of really intricate tunnel systems and lava flow holes and caves and stuff like that. Like, if you just Google, like, Aokigahara, there's a lot of photos of, like, not skulls and dead people, but, like, the really beautiful ice caves that they have.
Huh.
It's really neat.
Yeah. I should look that up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily, you don't really have to, because there's some photos here that I put in your notes.
Doing the work for me. Wow, those are the tops of trees.
Yeah.
That just looks like grass for miles and miles.
Yeah. A thing that volcanic ash does when it erupts is it renders the soil around it that it settles on extremely fertile. So after, you know, a volcanic eruption kind of levels everything for miles, there'll just be this huge eruption of life and trees and shrubs around the area, which, you know, creates definitely the sea of trees here.
That's really cool. That's kind of counterintuitive. I would think that lava pouring over a forest would just destroy everything on site, but it's actually good for plant growth.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same way that, like, a forest fire is good for plant growth, because it burns everything and allows new things to just kind of take all those nutrients and come up.
It's good in the long term.
It's good in the long term.
It's not it's not a good solution.
They do destroy
set forests on fire.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Just going around and burning forests and being like, I'm helping.
Hey, man, as of today, Notre Dame is on fire, so.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, it really sucks. Anyway, on to less depressing news.
Well, I don't know if this is less depressing, buddy. But, you know, it's really easy to see how if you were to step off of the path here in the forest, you'd just be completely lost.
Right.
Like, I think it's easy to grow up in Ohio and be like, oh, yeah, forests are kind of thick. But most people don't live around dense forests. And it can get kind of spooky, you know?
Yeah. And this is all level. I think about if you're in Hocking Hills or the wooded areas or in Ohio, there's usually some landmarks. If you walk in any direction, there's a town within a few miles.
Yeah, you can get to some kind of outcropping.
Right. But this is just for as far as the eye can see in any direction, trees.
Yeah.
Nothing but trees.
Yeah. So the forest is genuinely pretty inhospitable to human life, like, you know, most places in the world. But there are actually quite a bit of animals that live in there, and they seem to be doing just fine.
Aokigahara is a highly unusual forest in that it is comprised primarily of hemlock fir, Japanese cypress, and other evergreen needle-leaf trees, yet also contains broadleaf trees such as Fuji cherry and Japanese maple. Plants, shrubs, and mosses developed on the forest floor, resulting in one-of-a-kind carpeted scenery. The thickly wooded forest is also a good home to such living things as bats that live in the lava caves, small animals such as mice and moles, various birds including the great spotted woodpecker and the Japanese bush warbler, and plenty of insects. Larger mammals that reside in the forest include the Asian black bear, deer, foxes, boar, wild rabbit, and mink.
It's fun being like a stupid person, because sometimes I will be reading about something and I'll just be like, I didn't realize Japan had bears.
Oh.
And I'll just get really excited about it.
You didn't know that they had bears in Japan?
No. Is that like a well-known thing?
Well, I feel like, you know, the classic example is pandas, but there's also like red bears.
Fuck me, dude.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of bears. You go to the Columbus Zoo. What do they have? They have all Asian bears for the most part.
I thought they lived... No, pandas live in like China.
Maybe, but...
Hold on.
I don't know.
Hold on.
Yeah, that might have been a racial assumption on my part.
Pandas in Japan.
I guess I'm having fun being stupid too.
There's no pandas in Japan. They live in China.
All right, well, what about red pandas? Fuck. They're in China and the Himalayas too. All right, God damn it. Japanese bears.
Look at them. They're kind of fun.
Ooh, I've seen these boys before. Brr. That's what I think he's saying is brr.
Bear looks really dumb.
Especially when he's sitting like that.
It's very silly.
This is so good. All right, anyway, okay, we've conclusively worked out our stupidity.
Yeah.
There are no pandas and no red pandas.
But they just have bears in this forest.
They do have the Asian black bear.
Yeah. I also really like when people look at a place and just go, oh, this is some like extremely inhospitable terrain. And then there's just like a bunch of animals living there.
There's critters everywhere.
And the animals are like, I think this is pretty great, man. I don't know. I like animals. I think they're super good.
That's how developers come into all of our little towns in Columbus, like Old Town East. And they're like, man, this is bad. We need to change this area. We need to put some condos in here. The most of the people that live in that neighborhood are like, I don't know, man. I kind of like, you know, the dive bar down the street. And
I kind of like having lived in a place for like 60 years.
Yeah, you don't need to go fuck it up.
And then they just bulldoze it and then it's stupid.
Yeah. Anyway, on to less depressing stuff.
It's only going to get worse, man. I also looked at the weather for Aokigahara. And it's like, you know, pretty nice mid-50s, low 60s right now.
Huh.
It seems like actually like a super pleasant place to visit. And it's got all like the peace and quiet, you know, and you can see some like nice animals.
Yeah.
I like caves. I'm very pro cave.
Is that your platform?
I have a very pro cave platform. Yeah. I think we should have more caves in this country.
Yeah.
Just like burrow things underground. Don't fix any sinkholes. I would be underground all the time if I could.
More caves. For a better America.
And, you know, it's a really pretty place.
Yeah.
But, however, much we would want to separate the physical beauty of the forest from what, you know, it's most known for, the suicide stuff. That's really tough to do. The legacy of death in Aokigahara begins a long time ago with a practice known as Obasute. The amount that this was practiced is, like, kind of thrown into question a little bit. Some people think it was really common. Some people think it wasn't. But for our intents and purposes, since a lot of references to Obasute are centered in Aokigahara, I thought it would be worth kind of looking into this a little bit too.
Literally translating to abandoning an old woman, the legend goes that families facing particularly hard times engaged in the act of forcing sons to carry their own elderly mothers to the top of a mountain before abandoning them there, leaving them to die in an effort to cut costs during times of famine. The practice's prevalence directly corresponded with points when years of drought or famine would cast a specter of suffering among Japanese families. With rations low and mouths to feed, abysmal conditions left Japanese families to take extreme measures in order to ensure survival. First, a family would choose an elder, usually a woman, to do away with. Carrying her on his back, the old woman's son would hike to a mountain peak as she grabbed pieces of twigs and limbs from nearby trees and dropped them on the ground. These small markers would form a trail for her son to follow when he returned from the mountain peak, indicating that those abandoned chose to participate in the ritual, sacrificing their own lives for the long-term well-being of the family. Once they reached the summit, the son would leave his mother and begin his descent from the mountainside. The old woman would do nothing more than wait alone, night after night, until eventually meeting her demise due to starvation, dehydration, or hypothermia.
Yeah. Now, understandably, the frequency of this practice is often called into question because very few people are willing to admit to abandoning their parents in the woods to die.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah. It's not really a thing where, like, if some anthropologist is going around and being like, hey, do you know if anyone in your family ever just, like, strapped their mom to their back and wandered out into the woods and then left her? You'd just kind of be like, no.
Yeah, I don't think you'd want to flex on that. Yes, I did.
Weird flex. For the purposes of our episode tonight, though, we're going to choose to accept this as something that happened at some point, because a lot of the stories involve sons taking their mothers into the depths of Aokigahara. And that's where a lot of Japanese cultural anthropologists and people who have kind of studied why Aokigahara is the way it is, that's why a lot of those people believe the forest got this kind of reputation and vibe of death in the first place.
Hmm.
You know, it's got to come from somewhere. That doesn't just happen one day.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense that if the two coexisted, that kind of legend would be passed down to where we are today.
It's interesting that it starts not with an isolated, you know, something like suicide is a decision typically made out of loneliness, and it's an isolated thing. It's not like a cooperative effort. Whereas it sounds like in these cases, at least a lot of the time, it was a community decision recognizing the dire circumstances of famine and the stress that puts on their community.
Yeah.
And even the person who was going to die was a willing participant in this practice.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned like a couple really good things there where, you know, this is a community decision, because growing up in today's world and in the West, we're not really exposed to famine anywhere near to the extent that, you know, ancient Japanese people would have been.
Right, absolutely.
You know, if there was a famine, you didn't have anything. You know, it was bad. And maybe the only way you were going to live would be to have someone sacrifice their life for the good of the whole.
Hmm.
And I think that practice and what you mentioned kind of highlights the idea of the honorable death that's very significant in Japanese culture, the idea of sacrifice. This is silly, but it really penetrates like all aspects of culture. I love baseball a lot, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And baseball is really big in Japan, but in Japan, baseball is very focused on small ball, like singles, contact hitting, and the sacrifice bunt, where like if you are at bat and someone can score, you are intentionally going to hit so that you get out, but this other person is going to be able to score and help the team.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can kind of see where this idea of noble sacrifice, or like the noble suicide, for lack of a better word, kind of permeates quite a few areas of Japanese culture.
Yeah, it's funny because that is very much a trope in a lot of anime and Japanese movies. The like one character sacrificing themselves for the good of other people.
Yeah, and there's kind of the, if your grandparent or your elderly mother is doing this, it's their like one final act would be the ultimate act of love.
Yeah. You know?
That's kind of what made Obosuite this almost legendary act, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because there's a lot of cultures that is like Vikings that believe if you battle to a certain degree of, you know, honor, you get to go to Valhalla. There's obviously like the Christian faith is entirely surrounded by, it's entirely predicated on one person coming down and sacrificing his life for other people. There's like a lot of iterations of this sacrifice of someone, and it's interesting that this is kind of the roots of it in Japanese culture.
Yeah. And so like going along with that belief that Obosuite and sacrifice is a noble act, Japan is a nation that kind of does struggle a little bit with conversations about mental health and about suicide in particular. It's not something that really gets discussed. It's not a thing that you're going to go talk to a counselor about regularly. And that kind of brings us to talking about Aokigahara as most people know it today, at least people in the West. Here's a selection from the Aokigahara Forest website.
When you enter Aokigahara, there are signs in both Japanese and English advising people against suicide. One sign at the entrance reads, "Your life is something precious that was given to you by your parents," while another one states, "Meditate on your parents, siblings, and your children once more. Do not be troubled alone." The exact number of suicides committed here in a year is unknown, as the dense vegetation prevents some number of bodies from being found every year. However, according to a 2011 Japan Times article, 247 people made suicide attempts in the forest in 2010, 54 of them successfully. The suicide trend in the forest peaked in 2004, when police figures show 108 people killed themselves there.
Yeah, like one every 3 days.
That's so wild.
Yeah, and I mean, quite a few people believe that because the forest is so quiet and peaceful, it's a good location to end your life. You don't have to worry about being really stressed out when you're, you know, preparing for that. You don't have to worry about your family stumbling upon you and putting them through that trauma. But that mentioned that quite a few people who go into Aokigahara intending to commit suicide are just never found, because it is so maze-like. And I found one piece that talked about how a lot of people, if they're unsure if they're actually going to commit suicide, they'll go in the forest and kind of camp for a while, but they'll have to bring caution tape in with them, and they'll just start tying caution tape around trees along the way, so they can kind of find a path back out.
Yeah.
Which, again, is very similar to the Obosuite thing we mentioned earlier, where the mother would break twigs and leave them.
Leave a path.
Yeah. But, you know, that way you don't have to decide that you want to live and then try and find your way out and end up just dying of exposure and dehydration.
Right.
But, you know, it's worth underscoring that it's a pretty unforgiving landscape for how peaceful it looks. The reason people attempt suicide frequently in Aokigahara is one of the, you know, common criticisms you hear a lot about Japan is that people are extremely overworked, and that the loss of a job can feel really crushing, and that debt is also a really bad thing for you to get your family into. As I mentioned before, Japanese culture also rarely talks about mental health, and can tend to, you know, glorify suicide as well. So here's some information about Japan's suicide problem from their National Suicide Prevention website.
In some countries, suicide is illegal, or at least largely unacceptable on religious or other moral grounds. But in Japan, there is no such stigma. Apart from two specific occasions in the late 1800s, suicide has never been codified as illegal. The tradition of honorable suicide dates back centuries to Japan's feudal era, when samurai warriors would commit seppuku, or ritual disemboweling, as a way to uphold their honor rather than fall into the hands of an enemy. Present-day acceptance of suicide stems from this. Vestiges of the seppuku culture can be seen today in the way suicide is viewed as a way of taking responsibility.
Yeah, so this is... I thought this was really interesting. Because in America, and as we kind of read more about death in our own culture, I think we kind of view it in the opposite way. You know, suicide is really frequently viewed as the coward's way out, or a thing like weak people do. You know, am I right on that? You think that's...
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes so much so that a lot of people conclude that even thinking about suicide, or if you have any thoughts about it or struggle with that at all, that that is weak and cowardly too. And
yeah,
it becomes this weird cyclical thing where, you know, we have our own problems with our own culture's dealing of suicide, but, you know, we at least look down on it, and it's generally regarded as a bad thing you should not do.
Yeah. Which, you know, that I don't disagree with, but I also think it's really damaging to be like, oh, you had this intrusive thought. That's really horrifying, and you are like a bad person.
Right. You know? Or you are exceptionally like more fucked up than other people, and, you know, stuff like that. That's a bad hole to go down.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think either America or Japan is really doing, like, the best possible job at having discussions about suicide and things like that.
Right.
I think it's gotten better here in the States over the past few years. But I do think that, you know, Americans coming from a different culture can look at what this is in Japan, especially in Aokigahara, where it's viewed as, like, I've lost my business or something, and I'm going to, rather than bring this debt upon my family, I'm going to choose suicide. I think Americans can kind of look at that and sensationalize it, you know? And I think that's where we get really corny movies like The Forest.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I did not.
It looked really bad.
Yeah. I'll suspend judgment, but I'm probably not going to see it.
Yeah. There was another really corny one with Matthew McConaughey. You know, Matthew McConaughey was in an Aokigahara movie.
Oh, man, I love Matthew McConaughey, but he doesn't take the best roles all of the time.
This was, like, recent, too. It was, like, 2013.
Okay.
It's called Sea of Trees.
Yeah. Did you see it?
No.
Okay. I mean, yeah, without seeing it, I can't really make a judgment one
way or another. It was critically panned.
Okay. Yeah. So. Not a great topic to broach if you're not going to do a good job with it and a nuanced look at the issues that it's touching on.
Yeah.
Just don't.
You're just going to be like, oh, there's a lot of ghosts around here.
Yeah, maybe pick a different subject matter.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of really bad things and Aokigahara and really bad takes on the sacred land.
Oh, now we're
going
to get to the bad things.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the Logan Paul thing for a bit?
Well, I'm glad you asked. My stance is...
You have a take on this.
It's on site, Logan Paul. No, that's basically it. I don't... What do you want to talk about it?
Like, you remember what happened, right?
Yeah, he basically, you know, he made a video, because that's what he does every single day.
He just makes a video every day about his life, right?
Right.
And he was in Japan.
Yeah, you know, I think if you are a content creator and you set a schedule for yourself like that, I'm going to make a video every single day, you're probably frequently in a position of, you know, creator's block. What the hell am I going to do that's going to make this interesting after years of doing this every single day?
Yeah.
So you probably think there are interesting things to do. I'll travel the world. I'll plan something. Here's an interesting thing in Japan that I can do.
Sure.
I think that it was probably fine intentions, you know, initially, but it's just, that's what happens when you are just stuck in a mode of thinking only about yourself and your
deadlines,
business,
you know,
and your deadlines, and you don't recognize. And I think in America in particular, we have a pretty long history of picking and choosing when things from other cultures can benefit us.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go back and get really political about the impact of colonialism, you can. Or you can just look at Logan Paul and be like, oh, cool, weird, like, dead Japanese forest. Let's go.
Yeah,
I'm going to wear a fucking Toy Story cap.
That was, like, legitimately one of the most offensive parts of the whole thing. See, he's just wearing this dumb hat in, like, intentionally entering, you know, like, a sacred space, a space that's kind of set apart.
Right.
And what did he do? He, like, saw a body hanging from a tree or something?
I believe so. I did not see the uncensored video.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
But then he just kind of was like, oh, shit, this sucks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he could have addressed it in, like, a responsible way and not shown that video. But instead, he went back to his hotel room, edited the video, and then put it on YouTube.
Yeah. And monetized it.
Yeah, and monetized it.
Yeah. So he made some money off of that very controversial video of, like, oh, wow, bro, look at this dead dude. Well, he apologized for it. Are you not going to talk about his very genuine apology video?
I didn't see it. What was his apology video?
I don't know. I wrote a transcript of it, and it's, like, all nonsense words of, like... Like, have you ever heard someone apologize very genuinely for something?
Yeah.
You could probably just, like... If you just copy and pasted what they said, but changed some of the words around a little bit so that it seemed like it was your own, that's kind of what it felt like. It's like, I've heard other people genuinely apologize for mistakes before. I'm gonna try my take on that.
It's gross. It's just another example of kind of a lot of different cultures, and American culture in particular, but other countries do this too, exoticizing and making this really tough part about Japanese culture into this kind of mysterious, exotic thing that we can tell ghost stories about, you know?
Right.
But if you think about it, here in the States, we have a similar thing with the Golden Gate Bridge, which is estimated to have more than 1,500 suicides over the years.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where if you were living in, like, another country, you could reasonably look at the Golden Gate Bridge and be like, what's the mysterious thrall of this bridge that just makes people want to jump off it, you know? When over here in the States, we're just like, I don't know, that's like on the quarter.
Yeah.
It sucks that people do that, and I wish they didn't, but it's more than just a suicide bridge, you know?
Yeah, we have happy memories tied to it, too. It's in the opening of Full House, for God's sakes. Like, it's a fucking happy, fun thing that nobody looks at it as an icon of suicide in the way that Aokigahara is looked at.
Yeah, but that's exactly how Aokigahara is treated in Japan. You know, there are these big, beautiful caves that have these stalagmites and stalactites in them, and kids take field trips, and there's a lot of positive press about Aokigahara online.
Yeah, it sounds and looks beautiful.
Yeah. It's just that it happens to have this kind of, you know, not, I don't want to say small, but a blemish on it, you know,
yeah,
on its
definitely.
Reputation.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We've talked enough about how people are ruining Aokigahara and making it look like a really spooky, bad place. So, let's talk about some good folks for a change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the best way to combat suicide, especially if you can't monitor every single person, is by having, you know, like, measured, emotionally engaged conversations and interactions with people who are, you know, wrestling through those thoughts and feelings. And that's why I would like to nominate Toyoki Yoshida and Hideo Watanabe as pre-Dead Boys heroes. You're going to be the heroes of the week of this show. So do you remember talking about those signs that are posted around the entrance to Aokigahara?
Right. Yeah.
Those were put there by Toyoki Yoshida. And here's a little biography of him. This guy's really cool. I like him a lot.
Toyoki Yoshida, who himself attempted suicide twice due to business debts, blames Japan's money lending system for many of the suicides in the forest. He has paid to install security cameras at the main entrances to the forest and volunteers as part of round-the-clock patrols. In addition to the number of Japan's suicide hotline, many of the signs he has erected around the forest feature the phone number of a volunteer group headed by lawyers specializing in debt advice, as debt is a common suicide trigger.
Yeah, I think this dude's great.
Yeah.
Being someone who himself tried to kill himself in the forest twice, he kind of came out the other end of that and was like, well, maybe I should help people.
Yeah, he's actually trying to contribute to a national problem that is frequently the cause of a lot of these suicides. He's actually like constructive in this big, daunting issue, but he's still taking it on in a really cool way, in the way that he can.
Yeah, and a lot of the press about him, he genuinely seems to have found like a calling in life that he loves. It's kind of given him a purpose to survive,
wow,
which is neat.
That is so cool.
Yeah, and he seems like a genuinely nice dude and will travel around like helping people with staggering debts realize that sometimes this happens and it's a mistake, but it's not the ultimate shame on your family.
Right.
You know?
Hmm.
But Yoshida isn't the only one who's trying to help people who are struggling with suicidal thoughts. Hideo Watanabe owns this tiny little cafe. You know, like we've been to Forest, they all have those little coffee shops around them.
Do they?
I've seen some like coffee shops outside Hawking.
Okay.
There's like little towns that spring up that's just kind of like tourist trappy.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm kind of thinking of like, have you ever been down in Red River Gorge and been to Miguel's Pizza?
No.
There's a pizza shop that's also kind of a climber. Like they
oh,
sell some climbing
I've heard
gear
about
and stuff
this
too.
Place. Yeah.
Now I'm not a climber. I'm actually an awful climber. Usually, when I try to climb something, I end up either having a panic attack or crying or both. But this place was really cool. I went on a trip with some old roommates a few years ago, and Miguel's is just this oasis in the middle of Red River Gorge, and they have really fucking good pizza. It's fantastic.
So imagine Miguel's Pizza.
Yes.
Except this Watanabe guy runs it, and he estimates that in the 30 years he has operated his cafe, he has saved around 160 people from committing suicide in the forest. Here's his story.
Interviewed for a 2011 story, Watanabe said, "Most people who come to this area for pleasure do so in groups. So if I see someone on their own, I will go and talk to them. After a few basic questions, it's usually not so difficult to tell which ones might be here on a suicide mission. Once, a young woman who had tried to kill herself walked past my store. She had tried to hang herself and failed. She had part of the rope around her neck, and her eyes were almost popping out of their sockets. I took her inside, made her some tea, and called an ambulance. She received mental health counseling, and we are still in touch to this day. A few kind words can go a long way to ending this horrible trend."
Isn't that great?
Yes.
Like, I can't imagine the trauma that you would probably get numb to if you weren't aware of it.
Yeah.
Like, living on the edge of Aokigahara and seeing bodies carried out regularly.
Right.
You know? But it seems like this guy has really made it his mission to be proactive about that.
Yeah, he runs a coffee shop. Like, as much as it's incredible that, you know, mental health organizations and charities do all of this work, those aren't the only people who can help people struggling.
Yeah.
That, like, you can be a coffee shop owner or a librarian or a designer or work in a grocery store. Like, you can do things to make connections with people and prevent something awful from happening and being like a lifeline that they may need at that point.
Yeah, and I think that builds a lot of hope, you know, because it's all about that human connection that he wants to forge with people. I think that's really beautiful.
Absolutely.
In a really profound way. So I do think those two guys deserve our Pre-Dead Boys Hero Award.
Woo!
I don't know who else has won that in the past. I feel like we've mentioned some people
who
deserve that.
We got to start making a list or something because...
Oh, Lal Bahai, what was his name?
Who had the
Indian people who had been falsely declared dead?
Yes. Yeah. Was that our death hoaxes episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think these two guys go on a list with him.
Yeah.
In terms of people who are doing really, really good work out there.
Lal Bahari. Yeah.
Lal Bahari. Yeah.
Lal Bahari. to Yoki Yoshida. And what was Watanabe's first name?
Hideo.
Hideo Watanabe. Y'all three are in the Pre-Dead Boys Hall of Heroes. It's growing steadily. Steadily by the day.
We'll get some more people in there.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I did like being able to kind of wrap this episode with a more positive spin on the forest. I didn't want the whole thing to be doom and gloom.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think these two guys are doing a lot of really cool stuff. And next time you hear someone being like, hey, did you hear about that creepy Japanese suicide forest? Like, you can talk to him about some other cool stuff that people are doing and how beautiful that forest is without all the suicides.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's neat.
I don't want to be like super moralizing at the end of this, but it's really inspiring to hear stories like that and recognize that just the little connections that you make with people. That
absolutely.
As much as I struggle, I'm such a butthead in public all of the time. I'm kind of like head down. Don't talk to me. It's a good reminder that just a little bit of friendliness and trying to make connections with people and just make yourself available to be a friend.
Yeah.
It goes a long way.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to see, you know, two stories of people doing that.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Great work. And thank you for listening to this podcast. We got a little heavy on you there again. So thanks for sticking with it and sticking to it to the end and hearing the good
news. Yeah,
we'll
have to do some like weird dumb shit next time.
We always get to dumb shit eventually. It's always a matter of time before you talk about baseball and I talk about anime.
Yeah, you like how
Smash
I managed
Brothers.
To jam anime in this one or baseball?
Oh, yeah. And how I forced anime into it by wearing anime clothes. Yeah, we're idiots. But thank you for listening to these two idiots here. We love hearing from you guys. Tell us what you think about this episode and any stories, questions, comments you have. You can reach us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. We are on Facebook. Just search PreDeadBoys Podcast. You can also email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. We have a listener question.
Oh,
from our good friend Matt Moore. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Matt.
You still haven't apologized to Max's mother for the awful things that you made us read on this podcast.
Forgot about that.
But that's a topic for another day. Matt, I love you, but it's on site. Anyway, he asks, what would you guys want to be buried wearing?
You know, I used to think just like jeans, like regular clothes.
Uh-huh.
But after reading about how difficult it is to jam just a corpse into jeans, I don't know how much I like that.
Yeah.
You think shorts would be easier?
Maybe, but then your weird dead legs would be sticking out of them.
But if you close the coffin halfway.
I mean, at that point, you can just probably go nude from the waist down and save everybody the trouble.
I am into the t-shirt idea, though.
Just a t-shirt?
I don't know. I kind of like the idea of not being buried in like a big fancy suit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned that, but like I think a t-shirt would be really nice.
I like that. That's a hard pick for me. I would probably want to be buried in a band t-shirt of some kind. The last time Joyce Manor was in town here, I went to their show and bought
I was there
very... too. Well, I'm telling the listener, I'm not telling you. I know. But when we were there, I remember
you.
I bought a really comfy yellow t-shirt that said Joyce Manor. And then it also had like an illustration of a field of skulls and this kind of post-apocalyptic wasteland in the background. A weirdly metal t-shirt for Joyce Manor.
Uh-huh.
But I love it so much. And it's very comfy. And it's not a very form-fitting t-shirt. So I feel like if a mortician has to squeeze my body into a shirt, that's probably I'm trying to be easy on him and give him some loose clothes that you can squeeze me into, you know.
I just envisioned being someone who is like a big enough jerk that you're like, it's my last will and testament that I want to be buried in like Under Armour.
I want to be buried in ceramic compression gear. I want my corpse to be high performance.
When they, launch it out into space, as I'm sure we'll be doing in, 50 years.
That's gross. But that's a great question. Thank you, Matt. If you want to support the podcast, there's a few ways you can do that. First off, tell a friend about this podcast. We don't fucking advertise.
I don't know what an SEO is.
Oh, no one does. So tell your friends who would be interested in hearing about all of this good research that Max does and all the dumb jokes that I make on top of it, I guess.
I like them.
And you could also tip us $3 or more on our Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com/predeadboys. We got a couple donations this week. First one was from our loyal friend Drew, aka Anaconda Vice.
God, Drew's the best.
He sent us another $3 and a little message. He said, "Can't wait to tell you guys about my trip to Paris and the catacombs." He is there.
What the hell?
Yeah, he's going.
When was this?
Sorry, 10 days ago. And he...
Oh, sick.
Sorry, I've been emailing with him. But yeah, he and his fiance, I believe, are in Paris checking out the catacombs, which is dope, and I'm very jealous.
Yo, can you CC me on that?
You've got the login for our email too, bud.
It's on my phone, but I do this really dumb thing where sometimes I'll like see an email and I'll be like, oh, cool. And then I won't think about it. And then, but I've already read it, so you don't see it as new, probably.
Yeah.
So I got to stop doing that.
Oh, that's all right. We figured it out. Anyway, Drew, I hope you guys have fun there and send us a cool photo or two if you snap them.
Yeah.
It's awesome. We also got a pretty beefy donation from our good friend, Evan Latch.
Yeah, what's up, Evan?
Dude, he dropped $45 on us through the Ko-fi page. Yeah.
He's Evan, also, thank you.
Yeah, seriously, thank you so much. That is going to pay for a good chunk of the stickers that we've been talking about making.
Oh, nice.
So that's probably...
Evan, thank you a lot, yeah, genuinely.
You are funding cool shit that we can do, and we really appreciate it, man.
I'm gonna text him right now.
Oh, you should. But you should do that after this message that he sent us.
All right.
He said, "Hey, nerds. This podcast is very good. I'm excited for the black metal episode. Remember, you said you'd do it."
Shit.
Fuck. "And it should be good like the rest. And maybe it includes me or something because that crap fascinates me too much. Keep being positively pre-dead, please." Hell yeah. Well, thanks, Evan.
Man. Yeah.
I am... So I read at a glacial pace, and I have a stack of books that I'm working through, and in that stack is Lords of Chaos, and I'm gonna start the process of trying to like do some research on black metal, so bear with me. I don't know when that will be covered, if at all. Evan, we love you, but you know, we got to do our thing. You know, we've got so much stuff to talk about that we may not get to it in the near future or at all.
I don't understand anything about black metal.
It's rife with violence and just a little bit of racism. but you know, it might be an interesting topic. That's another thing, is we're not a true crime podcast. We're a podcast about death.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's very valuable when we hear about different cultures and how they deal with death. And I don't know how much the history of black metal is going to get into that.
Well, don't say that. He's going to take his donation back.
You can't. No refunds. Anyway, we're still in the process of figuring that out. But thank you so much for supporting what we do, Evan, and everyone who's donated so far, listened to the podcast, shared it with friends. We really appreciate it. You guys are the best. You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, and we'll read it here on the episode, and we'll give you a little shout out.
I got nothing better to do.
Other than like research and,
yeah,
you know, have work relationships and a job. Hey, Max, there is very big news in the world of the pre-dead boys.
I don't know if that's going to come across.
Turn off the news alarm in the pre-dead castle. I can't hear. I can't hear myself speak over it.
Think.
We are up for an award.
Hello.
That's right. We're up for an award in the first ever Columbus Podcast Awards, which admittedly we still don't know a whole lot about, but it's a voting process that starts on May 1st. And if we could get y'all to submit votes,
get those clicking fingers primed.
Yeah, we would appreciate it. First of all, they're going to have a ceremony August 25th at Gateway Film Center in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to go. We're going to wear our finest tuxedos, right?
We're going to have to rent that.
Well, we've got $45, so we will rent as many tuxedos as $45 can get us, I guess. But yeah, the voting will be on columbuspodcastawards.com. So go ahead and check that out and bookmark that page. And May 1st, again, is when the voting opens up. Our category that we're featured in is Best Entertainment Podcast. So you'll scroll through the list and see entertainment podcasts. You should vote for us there. There's also a Podcast of the Year Award, which is open to anybody. I think that's a write-in.
Yeah.
And also there's a Best Music category, and you should absolutely vote for our buddies. It's All Been Done, Bare Naked Ladies podcast.
Yeah, I was on that podcast. Evan and Saker are very, very nice.
They're very sweet, and they run a pretty impressive show.
Yeah, it's really remarkable.
Going through the whole discography and deep dives. They're great guys. It's a great podcast. You should vote for them. But mostly vote for us. That would be awesome. We want to blow it out of the water, and we want these fancy awards to rub into the faces of all of our friends who said we couldn't podcast, who said, that's a waste of time. Everybody's but got a podcast. What makes you so special? Well, guess what, Mom? Fuck you.
Guess what, Mom? Get on my back. I'm taking you into the woods. My mom would be so pissed. My mom would kick my ass.
She'd be like, hell no. And she'd put you on her back.
Yeah. Just knock me out.
No, our moms have been very supportive of this podcast so far, and we love them. So, you know, it buys them some time before we take them. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Good Columbus boys. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And that's going to do it for us. I'm not going to lie to you. These sweatpants were maybe a questionable choice in this room. It gets a little bit warm in here.
Does.
So I'm just going to keep pulling them up.
Keep
higher and higher.
Hitching.
Yep. Show off these games.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You better end this episode, buddy.
Yeah, it's hairy.
Where's the end episode button?
It's on my laptop. You can't touch it.
You keep going. Why do you keep pulling them up?
Just one last visual. This is my milky white hairy thighs. We need to think about while we end this episode.
Why are you between me and the door?
Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot.
Motherfucker. What are you doing, what are you doing June 29th?
I guess I'm seeing Tim Heidecker in Post Malone cosplay. Because that's who that looks like.
Jelly Roll. What do you think his... Wait, what is a skip the line ticket? And why is it 40...
Dude, hold on. Fuck Ticketmaster. Fuck everybody who sells tickets. If you sell tickets for someone else, if you're not selling tickets for an event you manage or are personally a part of, I don't fucking trust you.
What is skip the line ticketing?
Like, Carly Rae Jepsen tickets were $25, $35, but I had to buy mine through StubHub because they were sold out on Ticketmaster, and I had to buy them for $55 a pop. Yeah. Because StubHub buys all of them. It's bullshit. Like, their entire business model is scalping. And nobody is stopping them.
It's not a business model.
You're going to yell at the cool guy wearing, like, selling bootleg t-shirts in the parking lot at the Shot and tell him he's not allowed to do that. But you're not going to do anything about StubHub, who's buying up CRJ tickets and selling them for almost double the price.
Some of my favorite.
I'm livid, dude.